I always wear my mask and wash my hands after going home.
It's a good tuna, but I think I paid too much.
I am the king of the ring.
Welcome to the Japan What Podcast, episode 154. I am your host, MatthewPMBigelow.com. Coming at you from the Aizumicho Studios in Shinjuku, Tokyo, Japan.
The armpit of Asia.
Covering AI markets in Japan, Society 5.0, rising conflict in the Indo-Pacific, the supply chain wars, depopulation, migration, and more. We welcome you to the podcast. Busy day. Life is also very, very busy. It's insane how busy everything is. Just piles up and piles up. And you finish one thing, and before you know it, there's a list, and it's like, hey, you're behind. Sometimes that's the way life works, and you got to live life. I had a family member pass away yesterday, an in-law, a beloved in-law. Loved him like a brother. 50 years old, cancer. He had it. He beat it. Came back last year. Now he's gone. I'm not going to go into much speculation about all of that, but I just like to say I love you, and it's a tragedy to depart the earth at the age of 50. Makes you think when you should get started with families and stuff like that. I waited until my 40s, but he started in his 20s, and he was a grandfather by the time of his passing. But if he had waited, he wouldn't have had those grandkids, but he also, you know, departed at a ridiculously young age. Pretty healthy guy, not known to be an unhealthy guy. Anyways, we got to cherish those that we love, even if you can't see them that often, still love them. So there we go. Take her easy, bro. Let's take a look at the podcast today. It's just, you don't know what to say about stuff like that either. It's like, what do you say? Well, let's, you know, though the life and da da da. Now it's beyond words. Well, let's take a look here. We're actually going to begin on a very serious note. We're going to go into Japan Society 5.0 because the major corporations like Microsoft and Google cooperating with local governments in Japan to create AI governance laws. I put this message out in the podcast a couple of podcasts ago, and it's like, yeah, local Japanese towns are going to work with Microsoft and Google to create AI governance laws. And I'm going, what? And I'm walking around town and nobody is even thinking about it. And it's been boiling in my head like ever since. Like my eyes are about to pop out of my head and like steam is going to shoot out of my whole eye holes. I can't believe that this is just allowed to happen. Nobody can talk about it. I did manage to reach out to some people over in some of the media organizations I'm familiar with. The only person that covered it was InfoWars, and they wrote it up over there and on their website. So there's that. But often people will say, well, you went to InfoWars, that site, Sandy Hook. It's like, well, who else is covering it? I would be happy if other people covered it as well. So it's not about who's covering but the fact that it is getting covered. So the fact that we're just ambling into AI governance laws made by Google, like, do you really, I really don't like talking like that. I don't really believe that the local expertise in towns in Japan, especially where the average age is 50, 60, 70, 80 years old, I don't think they have the technical know-how to compete with Google. It's almost like the Yankees or the Yomiuri Giants playing against a preschool team, where you could kind of imagine that maybe you could have the top college team try against the Yomiuri Giants and see how they do. But this is really crazy, because I'm sure that these local towns need some collaborative expertise because they lack the expertise. But it's not as though Microsoft and Google are just these very, charity organizations that just love us. They don't. They view everybody as customers. So I'm not sure how the government will be able to parse the bias of these mega corporations out of the laws that these mega corporations are going to help them to make. Because, of course, they're going to try and shoehorn their own preferential treatments. Of course. And so this is like driving me nuts. And the fact that it's not driving anybody else nuts makes me even more nuts, because it's nuts. Can we all just say nobody is going like, this is the discourse on AI. AI, it'll be my friend, might take my job, or it might just destroy the world. But when you say, oh yeah, but Google and Microsoft are going to collaborate with local governments in Japan to make AI laws, people go, oh, really? Well, let's watch sports. It's like, okay, everybody just needs a very superficial injection of information to get them through the day so that they can pretend like everything's fine. But is it? So let's take a look at this one. Comes to us from South Korea and UK, and it's from the Japan Times. But it piggybacks on that news I was just talking about Microsoft, Google, and there's other companies as well that are aiming to collaborate with local governments to create AI governance laws, because we need AI governance laws. We don't vote on it. We don't get a say in it, but we're told that we need it, and then we're going to get it. And we don't have any say about how we're going to need it or how we're going to get it. We're just going to get it. Kind of, it's like, is this a coup? Is this like a international digital coup where they just shoehorn AI and shoehorn Google and Microsoft into the government with AI capabilities, and the government goes, well, it's AI, we don't know how it works, and we're gonna kind of even take less responsibility when things go wrong, because it wasn't even our AI did it, and it wasn't even our AI. Microsoft will have to apologize for this, not me, because that's all Japanese politicians do when things go bad. We're sorry. Then they bow, but they're going to be like, I don't even have to bow anymore. We're just going to get an AI avatar from Microsoft to bow for us. We don't even need a green screen. Just release it on Twitter. X. South Korea and UK to host second global AI summit as boom fans risks. By Joyce Lee from Reuters, but is published through the Japan Times. South Korea and the United Kingdom will co-host the second global AI summit in Seoul this week, as the breathtaking pace of innovation since the first AI summit in November leaves governments scrambling to keep up with the growing array of risks. UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak and South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol will oversee a virtual summit amid calls for better regulation of artificial intelligence, despite sharp disagreements on how the technology may affect humanity. So we don't know who's calling for them, but somebody's calling for regulation. So we have the governments and the corporations stepping in. Were they calling for it? Oh, no. But they're gonna talk about how it might affect humanity. I want to get down to the crux of this article. A separate South Korea hosted AI forum on Wednesday expects attendees, including the co-founder of AI safety and research company Anthropic and executives from OpenAI, Google DeepMind, and Microsoft Meta, Facebook, and IBM, according to the event's website. So again, we have, these are supranational corporations, so it's not like they're just only going to work with Japanese localities. Just like the sun never sets on the British Empire, the British Empire would work with all local governments and establish a way that would have the UK or the British Empire festooned to the very local level inside of these colonies. And that's kind of what's happening now, in my opinion. We're being colonized by software. The government, as it goes into the digital mode, the society 5.0. I didn't even play the jingle.
The fourth industrial revolution will enable us to create a new society.
This is society 5.0.
Artificial intelligence will transform the big data collected through the Internet of Things into new wisdom. Society 5.0, a technology-based, human-centered society. The fourth industrial revolution will raise our standard of living and solve various challenges we face. It will, for example, free us from the stress of driving.
All right, so that's the Japanese government society 5.0 video promotion thing that they got going on over there. And I've been covering AI for about 10 years now, 5 years in the telecommunications industry in Japan. And then since I started this podcast right before COVID-19 kicked off. So in this report, they're talking about a report. It's billed as the AI Safety Summit, but it's been expanded to include larger scopes. So it says, quote, risks such as large-scale labor market impacts, AI-enabled hacking or biological attacks, and society losing control over general purpose AI could emerge. But it will be the decisions of societies and governments that will determine the future AI, said the report, backed by experts from more than 30 countries. The report gives a nod to the widening front of risks from the rapidly evolving technology, not only existential risks to humanity, like what it doesn't say, but just, you know, but AI inequality, activist shit, data scarcity, is that because they're using the memory hole too much? They got the pedal to the metal on the memory hole, they're just like, get rid of all this data that says bad stuff about the governments. Then there's no data left. Like, where'd all the data go? Use of the AI did it. Use of copyright material and the environmental impact due to the vast amount of electricity used by AI data centers. So as you can see, the scope of worries are environmental and activist-y type of things like AI inequality, data scarcity. That just means people outside of Silicon Valley don't use the same tools that we're using. So we have to go everywhere all over the world and make people use these same tools so that we can monitor them and control them in a new AI-driven empire where the end user is just receiving like a crazy fountain of information, like the fire hydrant is open on full. And it's just blasting you every day with all the information that they want you to do. And of course, in Japan, what that's going to entail is downloading paperwork and then doing the paperwork all day and sending it back to the government so that they can digitize that data. These people are insane. They're crazy. And it's only expanding. This was technically from the Japan Times. It's from Seoul today, and it was written by Reuters. But this just kind of is an example that the push for AI governance all over the world by a select few companies is spreading. So it's not only these poor little people in Japan, it's also you, wherever you happen to be. This will be affecting you and your family and maybe your children in the future. So maybe talk to your children about data scarcity now. Ask them how they feel about data scarcity. Well, they probably don't give a crap. This is just their excuses to implement these systems. Talk to your children about society losing control because of AI. See what they think about that. This is all like boomer fears from the movies. And kids or people under the age of 35 don't really watch movies except for superhero movies. But even then, they have smartphones while they're watching them. Like this idea of listening to music like an album and putting on an album and putting on a movie and just watching it. That's something for people like born before 1980, pretty much. But the media is like for everybody born after 1980, all the print media. So they still use like the psychology of people born before 1980 for all the rationality of all these decisions going on. But talk to your children about existential risks to humanity, AI inequality. That's the one I wanted to say. Yeah. Sit down with your children or your friends' children and say, Hey, Hanoka-san, how do you feel about AI inequality, data scarcity, and the environmental impact of AI data centers? Because we need laws that are going to affect your future if we're going to have this stuff. How do you feel about that? They don't care. Nobody cares. So it's expanding. All right. Next one. So basically with the Society 5.0, it's an umbrella term. It's like self-driving cars. Self-driving car zero is the fully manual operated car. And self-driving car level five is totally automated. You don't need a driver. You can't even have a driver. Society 5.0 it runs in the same vein, where Society 1.0 is just not even agrarian. It's just people screwing each other in the caves and hoping for the best. And Society 4.0 was like the office culture. Society 2.0 was agrarian culture. And Society 5.0, they want to push this wireless networks, AI in the wireless systems. And we all interact in this hive mind for AI. And that's the Japanese government's proposal. And as you would expect your bureaucracy to do, they go farther and farther, as this plan goes on, they go farther and farther away from having things develop that help people. And they go more into their own weird world of theorizing things that never really materialize, but they require lots of money to do it. So right now, the Keidanren, the Japan Business Federation, is really focused on Japan Society 5.0 for sustainable development goals, a new cult. They're full in on it. But companies are still like, hey, we just want to use AI because we have these wireless systems and it can do interesting things, and it can cut down on errors and inputting data, and it having a shared cloud can mean everybody gets the same information at the same time. Let's focus on that. And I'm all in on that team, to be honest with you, because I like wireless systems. Wires are okay, but I was doing some mixing earlier today. It's like, okay, I have some cables now. I need the cables, because when you're doing music production, you can't have Bluetooth or wireless signals. It just doesn't work. There's delay. It cuts out. The quality obviously isn't as good. So you need cables, but the cables really stack up fast. And before you know it, you got like 13 cables running around your desk just so that you can play a guitar and record it. SoftBank Corp to help call center workers by softening angry customer calls with AI. So if you ever worked with the public and a member of the public comes in pissed off, they go to the lowest ranking person of a corporation or an organization and give them something to chew on, usually angriness. So this comes to us from May 20th. We're recording this on May 22nd, 2024. Tokyo, dealing with irate customers, also from JapanToday.com. But who is this via? Via Thomson Reuters. Most of the mainstream news media in Japan doesn't like SoftBank. The Yomiuri ties up with Docomo, NTT, and they're always like, oh, these people are awesome. But even though SoftBank will have like crazy stuff going on, they just ignore them. It's a weird bias within the Japanese structures. Dealing with irate customers can be extremely stressful for call center workers, but Japan's SoftBank Corp thinks it has a solution. AI-enabled software that softens the tone of customers' voices. Okay, this is very interesting. The country's third largest telecoms provider aims to begin testing the technology internally and externally over the next year and commercialize it by the end of March 2026. Quote, we are working on the development of a solution that convert the customer's voice into a calm conversational tone and deliver it to workers using AI-enabled emotion recognition and voice processing technology, SoftBank said in a press release. Quote, with this solution, we aim for good relationships with customers to be maintained through sound communication while ensuring the psychological welfare of workers, end quote. Japan prides itself on its high standard of customer service, but the issue of harassment of staff working in the service industry has gained more awareness in recent years. The government is looking at legislation to strengthen protection for workers. Around half of some 33,000 respondents to a survey this year by UA Zenten, a labor union for workers mainly in the service and retail industry, said they had experienced harassment by customers during the last 2 years, blah, blah, blah. So anyways, So instead of like, you can call up and be like, you are Fruitcubers. Like, hello, I have an issue and I would like to have it solved quickly. Or it doesn't change the word. So it would be, let's choose the words. My bill is way too high and I've been trying to reduce it. And I think it's your fault, you stupid piece of crap. I think my bill is too high and I think it's your fault. You are a stupid piece of crap. There we go. You don't even need AI. Just need a podcaster. Next one. This one came across as very silly to me from the Mainichi, Japan's national daily since 1922. The ride-hailing industry was never really allowed to enter into Japan. The taxi unions for a while had very strong power and they prevented this idea of Uber and the like from spreading in Japan. Also, like the idea that Japanese people use phones for things like cabs when in Tokyo, it's so convenient. You just hold up your arm anywhere and a cab pulls over and you get to where you need to go. It's gotten a lot better in the past 10, 12 years. Quite a while ago, it was really bad where you'd get into a cab and you'd be like, I want to go to Tokyo Station. I'd be like, well, how do you want to get there? Like, you're the cab guy. And then nobody would talk, you know, it's like, okay, uncomfortable. But recently in the past, 10 years, it's gotten a lot better. When I was at SoftBank teaching the AI courses there, the company had invested into Didi, which is a China version of Uber. And they tried to bring Didi over into Japan where people could reserve taxis, like official taxis with the app. And the labor unions for the taxi industry would regularly protest outside of the headquarters. I'd have to walk past them on my way into work. There would only be like 10, 12 people there, but still, they didn't like it. But recently, it's been declared that, okay, we're fine with it. You can now use ride-hailing services. But it says 1 month since ban ended, ride-hailing demand in Tokyo area prefecture lower than expected. May 12 marked 1 month since ride-hailing services have been allowed in Kanagawa Prefecture, just south of Tokyo. That's where Yokohama and Kawasaki are. The move was meant to kickstart the Japanese version of ride-sharing to alleviate a labor shortage in the taxi industry by allowing regular drivers to carry passengers, with the number of participating taxi companies. While the participating number of taxi companies has grown over the last month, some are raising concerns over the low demand. Ride-hailing services are allowed during periods with taxi shortages in four Kanagawa Prefecture cities, Yokohama, Kawasaki, Yokosuka, and Miura. They are permitted to operate between midnight and 6 a.m. and from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. What? So why is there such low demand? I mean, if you're going to really disrupt the industry with this advanced technology, the only way to do it is between midnight to 6 a.m. and from 4 to p.m., like split shifts when everybody doesn't want to work. This is ridiculous, of course. And why is there such low demand? Well, you can't have, it would be like saying, well, you can only use your smartphone for 20 minutes a day. And then it's like, well, smartphone use has gone way down. Why? Well, I think we know why. But this happens a lot in Japan where when they first allow something to happen, they really kind of nerf it or they really put the clamps on it. And they get down and just say, yeah, you can do it, but you only can do it here. And then it's like, well, it wasn't enough. And then if no problems happen, then they allow the program to expand. This happened with COVID as well. After Japan, which locked down for a long time to tourism, finally opened up to tourism, it was like you were allowed to come here, but you had to do quarantine, and then you had to have an app on your phone where the government could call you at any time, and you had to show where you were, and there was like a GPS element to it. And then if you wanted to do tours, you had to go around in a group of like four or five or like less than 10, something like that, and have government-approved tour guides that were like members of the government or something like that, guide you around like two or three areas for a little amount of time. And everybody went, what? This is like North Korea. And then it was like, well, this is crazy. And then the government says, well, there are no problems. So we're expanding it and you can now do a little bit more and then a little bit more and a little bit more. And now it's totally open. And now tourism in Japan is gangbusters. It's over tourism all the time, everywhere, everywhere you go. So this article here about ride-hailing demand in Tokyo being low is because of the ridiculous parameters put on it. But this is usually because if the government doesn't have any, if no problems arise within this limited scale, that means it's kind of okay to expand on it. But if somebody gets stabbed or, you know, if they unleash this program onto society and it goes all wonky, like some sort of needle and mRNA, then, well, you know, we have these negative side effects that occur as a result of it. But no one's talking about that in regards to the jibby jabbies. So there we go. When you could have a jibby jabby and completely fine. I'm not saying everybody who takes the jibby jabby is going to die. Just saying it was a weird program, terrible time in society, and it's traumatic. But anyway, so that's the idea behind the ride hailing. I'm sure that if it expands, if the government takes the leash off or doesn't have it so tightly constrained, then it would expand naturally. We're going to take a look at some other... What am I running here? We're just going to do like a quick look at some of the news of about more other AI services in Japan that are expanding. And I get these... I do a little bit of research in Japanese, and then I just translate the website into English using an extension. It's not ChatGPT. I kind of like how AI is not the best. So when it makes kind of stupid errors, I kind of prefer AI to be like kind of just a little dumb. I don't like it when AI is like joking, like, oh, I'm making a joke. It's like, yeah, all right, well, I just need a list instead of a joke. This is a new product. And I've noticed that a lot with recent developments in wireless tech. The wireless tech is embedded into the design of a product. What I mean by that is before, if you look at like satellite arrays, it would be like a big tower and it's like very ugly. It almost looks like alien technology. And you have like all these radar dishes on it or satellite dishes on it. It's like, wow, that's a satellite dish array and you can't go near it. Or you would have in your house like 10, 15 years ago, an internet router or router, and it would have all these lights on it and ports on the back, and it was unwieldy, and it was like this flashy, weird piece of technology. But with the advancement of miniaturization and design, now like 5G towers, and I'm not going to be like, oh, 5G is going to kill everybody. I'm not saying that. 5G towers look cool. You can put them on a street, and they will look like a post or something like that, or a street light, or the 5G tower is equipped with LED lights, facial recognition cameras, advertisements on it for the time of day, and possibly even wireless, spreading wireless 5G signals and things like that. And you would look at it and not even know that, unless you know how it works, that that's technology. It just looks like design and infrastructure. And same thing a lot with new routers at home, like mine. I have a SoftBank Air. It's just a white box that sits on your desk, and the kids don't even really know what it does. My kids, they don't even look at it. It's innocuous infrastructure. And this is also spreading with facial recognition. I've noticed that when I do research on these topics in Japanese, I get a lot more concrete details or concrete examples of how the technology is expanding within Japan society. Nobody else does this, by the way. So if you're listening, you're the only one who really knows about this in the English world. That's why people tune into the show, I think, more or less. So this is called Lixil, launches new model Giesta 2 facial recognition door handle. So it's a facial recognition camera that's integrated into the door handle of your apartment for like security purposes. So if you were like walking around looking to do crime and you see a camera, well, I'm not going to target that place, or I'm going to put a mask on. But if the camera is integrated into the infrastructure of like a door handle or something like that, criminal might become lazy and like show their face or something like that. Anyways, Lixil announced on May 7th that it will release an entrance door equipped with a facial recognition system, a new model of the Giesta 2, from June 3rd. The Giesta 2 from the window and door brand Tostem is newly equipped with a facial recognition system whose authentication section is integrated into the handle. I'll be posting pictures of this at MatthewPMBigelow.com. You got to check it out because, again, this is going to expand worldwide if it hasn't already, and it will be affecting you and your loved ones and how you interact with the world around you. So you may as well get used to it now. This allows for a design that blends in with the rest of the home, while stress-free facial recognition, even when carrying luggage, allowing the door to be unlocked by simply pressing a button on the handle. So it would be a two-factor authentication. You wouldn't just look at it and unlock. It would look at your face, confirm, and then you pull on the handle, and then it unlocks, which is, in my opinion, a good way to do it, because you don't want to... You want the action to complete the task a lot of the times. Otherwise, you might just be walking past it with your kid. It sees your face. It opens up and your kid runs out the door. It's like, well, you don't want that. And so you want to like have that two-factor authentication. For authentication, in addition to single authentication that allows you to lock and unlock the door with your face or key, you can also set double authentication that allows you to lock and unlock with the door with both your face and key. Now, guess how much they're selling it for? Well, if you guessed, 569,000 yen, which is probably around $5,000, you're right. So if you have enough money for a $5,000 handle that recognizes your face, well, Tostem Lixil 2, what is it? The Giesta 2 might be the product for you. Anyways, if you're a part of a design team or know some people working in AI, you should send this article to them because, well, it comes with a pricey tag on it, of course, but for the rich, they might be willing to pay for it. Yeah. And it shows a woman coming home, having her face scanned, and elegantly bringing in flowers to where she needs to put them. I'm not going to include it in the podcast today, but I'll include it in the show notes, which are available at MatthewPMBigelow.com. And this is Uber Eats. So very different from Uber, you know, ride sharing. This is the title from CNET Japan. Is it safe to deliver prescription drugs with Uber Eats? Of course it is. Why wouldn't it be? Another area where facial recognition is spreading is on for flights. NEC, which is a Japanese corporation, they make endoscopes. And as you know from the last podcast, a lot of doctors now are using endoscopes equipped with image AI in real time for their operating procedures in Japan. But this is between NEC, ANA, and JAL to conduct demonstration of facial recognition-based boarding procedures on passenger smartphones. Now, I don't know about the idea. Is the smartphone just like a training device that gets us used to everything being done like with remote? Like, you still need to carry your phone around and present the information, or you still need to upload all your information into the phone. But once you do, you can take your phone with you and not have to show your paper all the time. But you still have your phone with you. So it's like this, it's convenient, but is it? You could just keep my piece of paper with me and show it whenever I need to. But anyways, this comes to us from Japan, ZDNet.com. When was this, by the way? May 15th. This is not a breaking news podcast, by the way. Don't like breaking news. React now! The helicopter crash! Go! Okay. All Nippon Airways, ANA, Japan Airlines, JAL, Narita International Airport, and NEC are using Face Express, a boarding process that utilizes facial recognition technology to collect personal information that can only be accessed using terminals at the airport. We conducted a demonstration experiment of a mobile app that allows passengers to register and check in online using their own smartphones. The demonstration was conducted at Narita Airport from March 25th to March 28th. Face Express utilizes NEC's facial recognition technology, one of the best in the world, by the way, that's me adding that, by registering your passport, boarding pass, and photo information. Like, I'm already going, no, that's a pain in the ass. During the initial procedures at the airport, such as check-in, you can check in your luggage, enter the security checkpoint, pass through the boarding gate, etc., without having to present your boarding pass or passport, which was previously required. Then you can proceed with the boarding procedure. It doesn't seem like that's great to me. You wait in a chair, and then you put in all your information, and then you get in a line, and instead of having to give your information, you just continue walking. I don't know. In this demonstration, participants actually operated the app, registered to use Face Express, and then experienced the boarding process. The app is linked with ANA and JAL apps, allowing users to complete everything from online check-in to registering personal information on Face Express. Now, this just sounds like a giant possibility of like a biosecurity hack. If the airport knows where I'm going to shop, because you know when you buy stuff at the airport, they scan your boarding pass and look at your passport, and it's like, well, okay, this Jamoke likes beer. He's from Canada. He's 35. All right, we know that now. This Korean woman likes perfume, and she's 22. Oh, we know that now. But having all your information on the app and then having it distributed via the ANA and JAL apps, just so that you don't have to show a piece of paper. This sounds like it's... Anyways, in a post-experiment questionnaire, 98% of the participants answered that, quote, "This mobile app is useful and I would like to use it," indicating that the use of the mobile app provided this time will contribute to convenience at the airport and an increase in the usage rate of Face Express. Blah, blah, blah. It goes on from there. So again, I don't mind it that this would be like, if you want to use it, like, go nuts, fancy pants. But at the same time, it just feels like, okay, for the convenience of not having to show my piece of paper, I'm going to put a lot of sensitive information onto these apps, and now I don't have to show a piece of paper. Very odd. So that would be a no from me. JS Cube begins sales of Passid Face, or Pass ID Face, a document creation support system with facial recognition function for local government counters. Now, kind of this one I would be interested in, because there's so much, you have to, like, the amount of times you have to write down your address and phone number and name when you go into, like, government places, and like, sometimes you have to fill out three pieces of paper, and you have to spend a lot of time like, okay, this is my address, this is my phone number, this is my name. This is my address, this is my phone number, this is my name. This is my address, this is my phone number, this is my name. And a lot of these processes are becoming digitized, but you digitize your, this is your phone number, this is your address, and this is your name. This is your phone number, then you have to type it in and do it all over anyways. But if you have, I'm going to explain this. It'll be linked up at MatthewPMBigelow.com. This would be, your face fills in the information for you. So your face is connected to the information that's already in the government, and you go to the government building to use it. So of course there could be a hack involved, blah, blah, blah. It's not quite as bad as the commercial applications in airports and stuff like that, which are, I don't know, kind of weird. But you'd go in and scan your face, and then instead of you writing your information in on the digital forms, it just inputs it automatically. Like when you're shopping on Amazon and it remembers your address, and you just go, okay, I didn't need to add that in. So it's like, okay, your face does it for you. I'm not going to go into it. This is like holdings.topband.com, and it's a very boring article, but if you're interested in it, then go to MatthewPMBigelow.com and get more. A couple more here before we, what's this one? Translate it to English. My computer crashed as soon as I was doing my podcast here, and now everything is translated back to Japanese. Utilizing facial recognition technology to support shopping for elderly people in Ikata Town. And this is in Ehime Prefecture, a local, I shouldn't say, kind of a sparsely populated prefecture on Shikoku Island. Yeah. Not a lot of people there, a lot of aging people. And this one kind of sounds kind of nice to me, you know? You're elderly, you forget your wallet, you don't want to take your wallet with you, it's heavy. You scan things in the shops where you always buy them and use your face and go home. In Ikata Town, where the population is aging, efforts began in earnest. That's a very Japanese translation of something. On the 1st of May, to utilize facial recognition technology to identify individual faces to assist elderly people with shopping. The town is promoting this initiative to support the shopping of elderly people who are unaccustomed to cashless payments. A lot of elderly people don't want to get their smartphones out and start scanning barcodes and QR codes and have like the app go blip, 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 and, you know, 5 points, check here, boop, beep, beep, register now. It's very annoying. You just bring your cash, you slap it down, you get your change and you leave. And facial recognition payment is very similar to that. You put your goods down on the table, scan your face and you leave. Not a bad idea. At Kamegaike Onsen, a hot spring facility in the town, employees immediately input information on products purchased by customers, such as bathing tickets, and then read the customer's face on a tablet. By using the service, customers can make payments without having to exchange cash or take out their credit cards. The town has been preparing to introduce measures such as taking facial photos and registering personal information of residents since April, and as of the 1st, approximately 700 people have registered. Currently, there are only 20 facilities in the town that can use it, including supermarkets and roadside stations, but the town hopes to spread the word by calling on various stores to introduce it. Mr. Dogenpei, probably a bad translation, 67, who used the services, said, "I usually pay in cash, but it's convenient because I can shop without having to carry my wallet around." Yoshiteru Nakahara, head of the Ikata Town Town Development and DX, that's Digital Transformation Policy Section, said, quote, "We would like to continue to identify issues and aim to create a service that many townspeople can use." End quote. Yeah, I did the voice. It's from the government. We're supposed to mock them. All right. And anything else? It's a small scale as well. It's for elderly people, you know. Let's let them use their face to buy some natto and then, you know, go home and eat that natto. Anything else? I think that's about it. I had some information on self-driving cars, but it's self-driving accident investigation agency to consider government aims to resolve manufacturers' concerns. So I've mentioned this on the podcast before as well, where a lot of the technology is now it's settled, it's done, it improves incrementally over time, and that can be quite a lot. A lot of the hurdles right now are regulatory. And so it's like, if a self-driving car crashes, who's responsible for it? How do we figure this out? So that's a regulatory thing. That's a lawyer thing, looking at previous laws and maybe some amendments to those laws that need to be made, and maybe creating sections of road where it's only self-driving cars and people and bicycles and other manually operated cars are not allowed to go, stuff like that. And that's advancing as well. So this is from the Mainichi Japanese one, and I'll be including it on the MatthewPMBigelow.com website over at, believe it or not, MatthewPMBigelow.com. So that's going to be it for Japan Society 5.0. As we can see, the divide, we could talk about the digital divide or AI scarcity, the know-how of people and places implementing simple problem-solving techniques using this wireless technology can probably make your lives very good. But I don't then see why we have to have Google and Microsoft team up with the government to create AI governance laws, and not only in your town, not only in this Japanese town, but Japanese and Korean towns and towns and your towns and that person's town and all towns all over the world now need this right now. It's very, it's a coup. It's a software coup. And we're going to have Microsoft and Google and all these companies shoehorning their ambitions into the government without the government knowing what the hell they're getting involved with, because these companies are predatory. They're going to say, "We're going to help you. We're such helpful people." While at the same time, appealing to their bosses and appealing to their company's bottom line by expanding their products as much as possible, wherever they may be.
The fourth industrial revolution will enable us to create a new society. Artificial intelligence will transform the big data collected through the Internet of Things into new wisdom. Society 5.0, a technology-based Human-Centered Society. The Fourth Industrial Revolution will raise our standard of living and solve various challenges we face. It will, for example, free us from the stress of driving, allowing us to safely visit anyone, anytime. We will have access to the latest medical advancements at a low cost, no matter where we are. AI and robots will enhance human ability and expand our infinite possibilities, helping us enjoy more fulfilling lives. Society 5.0.
All right, let's take a look at de-dollarization.
Here we go.
Cool snare sound. I was working on snare sounds earlier today. It's tough to get that snare to pop without taking it all over. So 3 years ago, well, actually 4 years ago, on the 8th of January, let's just actually go January 1st, 2020, $1 would get you pretty much 100 yen. Now, $1 will get you will get you 156 yen. So you've seen this massive devaluation of the yen, and we're seeing the rise of counterparts as well. And it's not only the BRICS nations, it's also crypto and Bitcoin and things like that, giving people and more options to compete against the US dollar. Now, there's a reason why a lot of people want out of the U.S. dollar. It's a very political system. The U.S. dollar can just be printed willy-nilly, and then it affects countries all over the world and the ripple effects of internal struggles within the United States. And a lot of people are getting tired of it, especially Russia, China, other countries as well. And Japan is firmly in on the USD. Japan is an occupied country. There's military bases all over here by the US. And the Bank of Japan works very closely with the bank, with the Federal Reserve of the United States. I'm not sure if they work closely, but they work hand in hand. And Japan is still firmly under the wing of the United States government. It's very true. And as the China works on its Belt and Road Initiative and its One Belt, One Road and its supply chain networks, along with Russia now and more countries, Japan's not invited. And as we see the U.S. dollar become more frowned upon internationally, the countries that are involved with that are going to see their own pies start to shrink. And I believe we've already seen that with the Japanese yen. Of course, I'm not a financial expert. I'm not a speculator, but I like analyzing trends. And I've lived here since 2006, and I've seen the Lehman shock. I've seen consumption tax be introduced. I've seen the yen go up, and I've seen the yen go down. But with the COVID thing, we shut off the economies all over the world, or a lot of them did, and printed money in excess, and then just tried to hit the start button again. And I'm not sure if the gears are still functioning as they used to. So I'm covering de-dollarization because it also, in a way, means de-yenification, or the yen will suffer as a result of the internal policies of the United States and how they weaponize their own dollar against other countries. I have a couple of news articles on this, and let's just begin. Actually, I was going to begin with a graph, but I'm not going to do that. Two news articles that kind of play into this hand of supply chain wars and China leading one way with a government-backed digital currency, central bank digital currency, the ECNY, the e-yuan, already in use. And put into use into its supply chains, which will use Huawei telecommunications equipment and Huawei telecommunications equipment, not only, you know, like the satellites or the balloons or the towers, but also the software and the phones that people use. So you're a resident in Beijing and you order things from Africa, and China sends out its ships tracked by AI, and the ships go to Africa and use the rails there built by China now, and go to little towns there with train stations built by China, and the local African community there puts their goods. They receive the payment in yuan, and then the goods go back to Beijing and the people can drink their coffee. That's just one aspect of it. And China really wants the whole world to get in on this, because if they do, then it would de facto replace the US dollar without having to compete against it. So they don't want to compete against it, because it would undermine their own currency by having to compete against something as powerful as the US dollar. So why not just slowly replace it? Yeah, like some sort of, propaganda program where somebody goes into a cult thinking that they're just going to get some free food. And then 3 years later, they're out on the streets trying to convert other people. They kind of were replaced by something. And that's what China wants to do with its ECNY. And right now, the administration of the United States is really not doing itself any favors. Like they think they do. They're always laughing, being like, ha, we're going to kick their ass. They're so dumb. And time and time again, it backfires on them. And they don't even realize it. They're just like, yeah, we kicked their ass, but they didn't. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen will push fellow G7 finance officials this week. When is this? This was May 20 as well, so a couple of days ago. This comes to us from JapanToday.com, but it's from Thomson Reuters again. Just copy and paste. That's what most journalism is these days. So Janet Yellen will push fellow G7 finance officials this week to agree to a plan to bring forward the interest earnings on frozen Russian assets to provide more money for Ukraine quickly, a senior U.S. Treasury official said. The official told reporters ahead of Yellen's May 21-25 trip to Frankfurt, Germany, and the group of seven finance ministers and the central bank governors meeting in Stresa, Italy, that the G7 is making progress towards consensus on a plan to harness about $300 billion in Russian sovereign assets frozen since Moscow's February 2022 invasion of Ukraine. So the reason why I'm including this into the dollarization is that if the G7 goes ahead and seizes this $300 billion, it's going to send a whole bunch of other nations flocking to BRICS, because the U.S. invaded Afghanistan, Vietnam, Iraq, Syria, Libya. It's been leaving this like ripples of just chaos and destruction in its wake every time it steps outside of its own borders. Then Russia goes in and tries to peel off a piece of Ukraine for a bunch of reasons that you can agree or disagree with. And they say, no, we're going to take your money. Well, that sends a message to the rest of the world. Will China, if they try to take Taiwan, will they get kicked off of SWIFT? Will then the United States try to seize all their, dollars or something like that? So there's this ridiculous policies by the United States that are basically, they're self-sabotaging. And the reason I include this article into the de-dollarization movement is that other countries across the world will look at this and say, we got to get out of this thing. We got to look at alternatives. And some of those alternatives are the BRICS currencies. They are aiming to have cross-border trade done between local currencies. So if China is trading with Russia and trading with Russia and Cambodia, it would trade between Russia with rubles and renminbi, and it would trade between Cambodia with the Cambodian currency and the renminbi. So you wouldn't need the US dollar between them, but it wouldn't just be a one encompassing currency. The idea is that it would be backed by gold and by blockchain ledger technology, which means that the ledger is open for everybody to see what is happening inside of it, which would be a kind of a way to legitimize the renminbi, because it's very cloudy and dark and I don't trust it at all either. But if it's made to look transparent, then it might get more people on board into using it. And that's one article today for the de-dollarization. So if the G7 goes ahead and does that, which Japan is a part of, we're going to see ourselves get shot more in the feet. And then the other aspect is that I mentioned that China is looking for its One Belt, One Road policy for markets. And they're already implemented the CBDC at the last Beijing Olympics and got people to use it there. And now they're expanding on that. And Hong Kong opens digital yuan wallets in first for non-mainlanders. And this comes to us from the Asia Nikkei, I have found for the New World Order on May 17th. Hong Kong has become the first city outside mainland China to allow local residents to open digital wallets with the ECNY, or digital yuan, marking another step in the internationalization of China's digital currency. So China is looking for ways to open up its markets and open up its usage, while the United States is looking at ways to seize and control and kind of be very paranoid about who gets to say and do what with its money. It's very hypocritical. Quote, "This is not just an ordinary digital wallet, but one backed by the People's Bank of China," said Howard Lee, deputy chief executive at the Hong Kong Monetary Authority. How Hong Kong has changed. Man, Michael Yon was right. The Chinese will not just take over militarily. They'll just move a bunch of people in, change the laws, and before you know it, it's China. Residents of Hong Kong can now open e-wallets with four major mainland state-owned banks: Bank of China, Bank of Communications, China Construction Bank, and Industrial and Commercial Bank of China. I don't know where one bank ends and the other begins with that list. Using their mobile phone numbers in the city. Foreign nationals living in Hong Kong are also eligible for the service, according to Kitty Lai, head of financial infrastructure development at the HKMI, MA, that would be the Hong Kong Monetary Authority, I believe, as long as they have a valid local mobile phone. And it kind of goes on from there. So I'm just including that with the de-dollarization movement because if this is successful, China can just start expanding this salami slice style out towards other countries, like I said, between Russia and then Cambodia, and further out it goes and goes until they have their own system in place that is then adopted on the yuan of the U.S. dollar. So the U.S. dollar is going down. And I have another, there's a graph that I wanted to use here, and this is, turn that off. China cross-border foreign exchange deals by currency or FX deals. And this is the difference between how the China is using the U.S. dollar versus the Chinese yuan. This is total percent of total receipts and payments on current account and financial accounts, non-banking. So this was the use of cross-border usage of U.S. dollars and cross-border usage of Chinese yuan for China specifically. And in the year 2010, there was almost no Chinese currency being used for international trade, FX deals, cross-border FX deals. And more than 80% of the cross-border FX deals in China were done with the U.S. dollar. But when Trump became, when Trump had a whole bunch of sanctions put on China, the usage of the Chinese yuan, which had been increasing up until that point from 2010 to 2015, went down. And then the U.S. dollar usage went back up. So after 2017, the percentage of yuan being used for cross-border FX deals was at about 20%. So from 2010, almost zero, to 2017, about 20%. And that's from 30% after prior to Trump's sanctions on it. So in 2017, there's 20% of the Chinese yuan being used by China for cross-border payments. But still, it's more than 70% at that same time of China using the U.S. dollar. Fast forward to 2024, March, and the usage of Chinese yuan for cross-border payments is at 52.9%. And the usage of the United States dollar is down to 42.8%. So over time, the salami slice style, like this is a graph that kind of steadily goes up in one way and steadily goes down in the other way. Going down from 2010, the usage of cross-border payments in China, the U.S. dollar represented more than 80%, now 42.8%. In 2010, almost 0% of the Chinese yuan was used in cross-border payments. But now, in 2024, just a mere 12, 14 years later, it's more than 52.9%. So these are the impacts of the digital yuan. And the way that it affects Japan is that Japan is not invited into the BRICS. It's basically an American subsidiary. And we've seen the yen take a real dump over the past 3 years. And as we see that more countries adopt the BRICS styles, they might have quite a significant bump in their value, whereas the yen will continue to just take a dump thanks to our governors and the leaders, the crazy leaders of the West right now. Kishida, the Prime Minister of Japan, is the Justin Trudeau of Asia. Biden can't find both of his buttocks with both hands. All of these people, they're dangerous, they're reckless, they're cavalier, and they're the ones driving the boat. Like, it's psychotically crazy, and it's only going to get worse with these people, because it's not like as if you just change the administration that now we have like this era of philosopher kings. You have to have like a total like drive societally to navigate through this. And there is no such thing going on in Japan right now. So we are part of this de-dollarization movement, and we are going to continue to be a part of it. And there's nothing we can do about it. So I don't know what to say about that. I guess the other thing was like, look at alternative financial options out there, but I'm not a finance guy. I'm just kind of going, well, we've faced like the idea of market crashes before, like even in Lehman Brothers and things like that. But that was 2008, I believe, right? That, yeah, 2008-ish to 2010. That's where like the whole fiasco kind of outplayed itself. But at that time, there were no competing markets to the U.S. dollar. But now we have Bitcoin. Now there's the BRICS and things like that, which means that there's other places for people to go. So if everybody's a hostage in the same building and there's no other buildings, and a guy with a gun just starts killing some of the hostages, well, there's nowhere else to go. But if you have, like, even if they're not even, like, that great of places, if there's some other places to go, you're still going to have, like, people going other places and saying, I'm out of here. We're going to make our own pies, and we're going to figure out a way to make it better than your pies. And we're seeing that the pie is actually easy to replicate these days with digital equipment and software and so on. It's going to be very buggy and not very good, but it's still going to provide an avenue of escape for so many people in countries to get away from the craziness of the U.S. dollar and how it's been politicized, abused, and weaponized in the past few years. And Japan really has no alternatives. So there's that. It's kind of a crazy idea. It's not the most positive thing. I don't really think it's a positive thing. The only thing that's good about it is that it just drives hundreds of millions of tourists likely in the next couple of years into Japan to spend the money here. So there's that. So if you're in the tourism industry, you're going to be serving pork chops a lot to you and your family members, or not even pork chops. You're going to be basically going to the Wagyu cow farm and just buying Wagyu by the cow and bringing it all home and saying, we're in the tourism industry, we're eating this cow.
Here we go.
All right, that's going to be the podcast for today. So thank you for listening. That's Matthew, pmbigelow.com. Make sure to go there for the show notes, photos, and more. Make sure to hit us a donation. I'm not promoting today. Fuck that. So thank you very much for listening, everybody. God bless to my brother-in-law. He's in hyperspace now. We miss him dearly, and it's a real bummer. But we don't know when God hits our ejection seat, you know? We just don't know. Be spiritually aware. And that just means understand that the end can come at any time, and you have to be at peace with the people you love. Because all of these other things that I'm talking about pale in comparison to the importance of having a network of people that you can love and rely on. Because at the final hour, you want to be around them and not a bunch of weird-ass podcasters.